Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Big transfer news today.
Who's moving?
Me. To the couch. With Domino's best deal ever since they just added stuffed crust.
Any pizza, any toppings, now with stuffed crust for $9.99.
It's a long-term contract with no release clause.
Only $9.99? Yeah, that sounds like the move. I'm heading straight to
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6/15 through 7/26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings, 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
And while she's pulling that up, is there a difference between, see that's how that's blue? You see that's medium?
Yes.
So the blue ones you use for test A and B, correct?
Correct.
The smaller crash test dummy than Mr. O'Keefe, the 5'9" crash test dummy, yes?
Correct.
And then when you use Randy and brought him into the scene, you use the extra large, the gray one?
Correct.
Right, so you used a different one because it was a smaller anatomical doll than the size of Mr. O'Keefe, yes?
We used different sizes. The material blend was the same.
This was new?
Correct.
The extra large you put on Randy was new?
Correct.
Did you consider that wear and tear on Mr. O'Keefe's sweatshirt, the extra large sweatshirt he was wearing that night?
The wear and tear?
Yes, the wear and tear.
No.
Did you ever consider the differences between a brand new sweatshirt and one that had been worn?
No.
Had you ever had clothing, sweatshirt you used repeatedly, maybe put in the dryer, wears it down, sometimes you can get holes more easily? Did you do any type of analysis on that whatsoever? Any type of analysis whatsoever on the age or whether it's stretched the same, anything like that?
No.
No variables whatsoever on the sweater, did you?
No.
Okay. Does it matter whether or not the sweatshirt is tighter or looser or how it fits the body? Is that any part of your consideration?
No.
Have you ever done testing like this before for clothing?
In terms of impacting a taillight?
Yes.
No.
So this is the first time ever that you've done this type of analysis and offered an opinion in front of a jury on this?
Specific to impacting an arm with a taillight, yes.
Before you decided to come in and give an opinion, did you take any study or look at any journals on fabrics?
No.
Did you consider any of the variables that one would want to consider regarding fabrics before you came in and gave this opinion?
No.
Did it concern you when you were coming in to give a professional opinion about something you've never done before, whether or not you were studied in the area before you did it?
Well, I think I relayed my observations from the test, right? I certainly explained how we set up the arm, how the arm was closed. You all obviously saw the impact testing to the arm, so I'm relaying my observations from the test that we did.
Did it concern you that you were coming in to give an opinion on something you have never done before and that you did absolutely no study on fabrics or any of other people's analysis on fabrics in cutting? Did that concern you?
No.
So you were comfortable just coming in with no experience in this whatsoever, without even studying or doing any research, you were comfortable to come in and just throw out an opinion?
No, again, and Dr. Rentschler is going to address part of this. We worked as a team, so there's a synergy between the two of us.
Well, putting aside the synergy, you're the one on the stand under oath, yep?
Correct.
You're the one testifying, giving opinions to this jury, yes?
Yes.
You're the one asking them to rely on your experience and training, true?
Correct.
You're the one asking them to rely on your judgment and your effort to be accurate, yes?
Yes.
So when you give the opinion, you have a personal responsibility to support that opinion, putting aside Dr. Welcher or Dr. Rentschler, you have responsibility for your opinion, don't you?
I would generally agree with that, yes.
Generally?
Yes.
When wouldn't you? When would not be general? Don't you have an obligation every single time you take the stand and give an opinion to be supported, valued, vetted?
Yes, and again, Dr. Rentschler is addressing those abrasions and lacerations, which certainly correspond to the material.
Right. But you didn't wait for Dr. Rentschler. You offered a number of opinions to this jury. You personally, under your name, you came in and presented yourself as an expert in this subject. You, didn't you?
Correct.
So putting aside Dr. Rentschler, his opinions, you, do you stand behind your opinions?
Yes.
Okay. And you do that despite the fact you've done no study, no research, haven't vetted, and have no authority whatsoever?
Yes.
You wrote a report back on February 12, 2024?
Correct.
In February 12, 2024, do you remember talking about injuries to the arm and damage to the taillight?
Generally, yes.
Okay, that's fair. Do you remember writing in a report, it is significant to note that the injuries have been classified as abrasions, and analysis of the autopsy photographs indicates minimal bleeding or lacerations of the dermis?
So the report that you're referring to is a joint report authored by myself, Dr. Rentschler, and Mr. Scott Klein. So that would have been a portion drafted by Dr. Rentschler addressing the injuries.
I see. So in this report, it has your name, Dr. Rentschler, and another person, Scott Klein, yes?
Correct.
But in the report, none of you ever differentiate which opinions you're standing behind or somebody else's, right?
Objection.
I'll move on.
The objection sustained.
I'll move on.
The objection is sustained.
Did you agree with that?
Objection.
Sustained.
Did you write or endorse these injuries would not result from impact with a non-damaged tail lamp cover and the amount of force required to fracture the tail light cover?
So I'm going to see you in time. You were asked questions about impact with the taillight. And in fact, in one of your answers to me today, you talked about after a vehicle collides with a pedestrian, there's continued movement between the vehicle and the pedestrian, isn't there?
Correct.
And so while glass that, or plastic that shatters from a taillight might not impale cloves of the skin, would you agree if your dummy wasn't restrained, when the Lexus collides with the dummy, there'd be continued contact for some time, extended contact between both the dummy and the taillight?
Well, the arm, as is demonstrated in the test, would be moving at roughly the same velocity as the vehicle.
Yes. And don't you think that the vehicle would continue to drag the arm until the body either was thrown or spun off? Would you agree with that?
At some point they will separate, yes.
At some point, but before the at some point, what I'm asking is, at the collision, when you see all the taillights shatter, right, wouldn't the Lexus, if it continues at that speed, say 24 miles per hour, for example, it would continue to drag
with that dummy's arm longer than is shown in those experiments because the dummy is restrained.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yes. Would you agree that if Alexis is backed up at 24 miles per hour and hits the dummy's arm and the taillight shatters, if the dummy wasn't restrained and moved regularly, it would extend the contact between that shattered taillight and the dummy's arm? Would you agree with that?
It would move with the vehicle until it got pushed out of the way, just moved to the side, yes.
And so what you're saying is it would move with the vehicle but wouldn't touch the vehicle?
Well, in the one test, if you remember, because of the restitution effects, we actually, the arm reached a speed of over what the impact speed is. So in some instances, it actually might move at a speed greater than the vehicle.
Fantastic. In some instances, would it move slower and be dragged by the vehicle's broken taillight?
Dragged?
Yeah.
I don't know
so
if I understand.
Dragged, push. How about we use the word push? Pushed by the broken taillight. Could that happen?
The arm would move with the taillight until it moves out of the way.
So you're saying it would move with or faster, but never would slow down where it gets pushed by the car?
It's moving with the vehicle, sir. I don't understand your question.
Well, no. You said it moved with the vehicle. Sometimes it moves even faster, suggesting space between the broken taillight and the arm. That's what you're suggesting, right?
Correct.
So it can move with, it can move faster. Can it ever move slower and the vehicle pushes and drags against the arm?
I mean, it might be able to move a few miles per hour if it doesn't have as much of a center of mass hit, but it's still going to move out of the way because it's on a joint.
I understand, but before it moves out of the way, could it be pushed by that broken taillight? That's the simple question I'm asking you. Could it be pushed by the broken taillight?
Just moving adjacent with the taillight, just moving along. Yes.
Would you agree with this? If you have an arm struck at 25 miles per hour, significant more damage that taillight shatters, hits and moves forward into arms, parts of taillight pushed into arm as vehicle pushes forward and pushes arm out of the way. So the word push, would you agree with that general characterization that the broken taillight can, in fact, push the arm? Would you agree with that?
Generally, I guess, again, it would move with the vehicle, the arm together.
Not move with. I'm asking you if you would agree about pushing. Would you agree with that?
As long as we're on the same page about it, it's pushing the arm, but it's with the vehicle. They're moving together. So, but in essence, yes, the arm is being pushed due to the fact that there's a force on it.
And the pushing could have that arm in contact with the broken pieces of a taillight if the taillight broke, correct?
Just moving at a common velocity?
The operative word here is push. And so do you like to agree with me or you could disagree with me? Can the broken taillight push the arm so it contacts and provides force against it? Could that happen?
Yes.
When you were shown those photographs today regarding test F, now you use Randy in test F, right?
Correct.
How tall is Randy?
He's 6 feet.
And he weighs 200 pounds?
Correct.
So still 16 pounds less than Mr. O'Keefe, yes?
Correct.
And you keep referring to Randy as a crash test dummy. Randy's no dummy, right? He's a mannequin.
He is, but he signifies basically what happens when you have 200 pounds of mass striking the rear of that vehicle.
I don't want to misrepresent Randy. He's not a crash test dummy, is he?
Well, it wasn't used for biophilic purposes. It was to, again, what happens when you have 200 pounds of mass strike the vehicle.
So when you've been referring to Randy as a crash test dummy, you don't mean to do that. That's a misnomer, isn't it?
I don't know that I agree with that.
So you think that Randy is a crash test dummy? He's a certified approved crash test dummy?
No, and I think I made it very clear that there is no instrumentation on it, right? And one of the reasons why I mentioned that is those ATD dummies are $100,000, $150,000, so we're not going to risk impacting it with the Lexus and destroying that.
I can understand the cost analysis for you, but I want to be clear. He's a mannequin. It's used by firefighters and drills pulling a body, dead weight, out of a house to replicate certain scenarios. That's what Randy was made for, yes?
He can be used for those, yes.
Right. He's not a crash test dummy in the parlance of a legitimate, studied crash test dummy, is he?
I don't agree with that because, again, we use that type of dummy in all different types of tests.
There's an H395M PED, which most closely replicates John O'Keefe's size and body, isn't there?
Correct.
You didn't have that when you did the test, did you?
No.
When you do crash tests, you can put a magnetic control on the crash test dummy, so upon impact, it releases and is thrown. You could do that, couldn't you?
That is one way, yes.
Right. So that way you don't have to put the dummy on a forklift, and then it creates a different scenario than real life, correct?
That could be one way that you could do it, yes.
It doesn't impede any roll or drag when the dummy's hit. That's one reason you would do that rather than a forklift, yes?
Correct.
Also, it might show some throw, which could lead to other type of damage like holes in clothes, yes?
Correct.
But you didn't use the magnet. You used a forklift.
Because, again, the purpose of the test was to evaluate, you know, we talked a lot about those time frames, right, that 10-millisecond window. It's to look at, from the vehicle damage perspective, what happens to the taillight, right, in that interaction. And then ultimately, what is the acceleration that the arm experiences in that, you know, 10, 15 millisecond window, right? What happens 1 second after, 2 seconds after? Again, that wasn't of concern for me in my analysis.
You didn't use a magnet. You used a forklift, right?
Correct.
And when Randy went for a ride, you didn't expect him to break off the string and slide across the street, did you?
We didn't expect him to.
You didn't expect him to be thrown. You didn't expect the string on the forklift to break and then Randy to go flying. You didn't expect that, did you?
Oh, I certainly expected that.
So you expected a throw with that?
Yes.
Okay. And the street has hard concrete and it has a lot of irregularities to it, doesn't it?
It's asphalt, yes.
Yeah. And the photos that you were shown today on redirect examination, did the defense show them to you during your direct examination? Any of those?
No.
Ms. Gilman, can you pull up that last exhibit with Randy on the ground? I think it's exhibit 221. Okay. And so this is Randy, right, doctor?
Yes.
Zoom in a little bit, please. What's that red thing near his shoe?
Appears to be a fragment of the taillight.
Okay. Can you zoom out? Could you go back an exhibit to the one before? Could you zoom in? Did you see any taillight fragments on his body or in his clothes?
I can't tell from here.
Could we have the exhibit before, please? Can you tell from here?
Yes.
And finding taillight fragments on the clothes after a collision, that's not unique, is it?
Unique? No, it's possible.
Well, according to this, it's probable, yes?
In this test, that did occur, yes.
Could we have exhibit 201D, please? Do you know what this is, doctor? Did you see this picture in your analysis?
Don't know if I recall that specific photograph.
Do you know this is taillight shards found in Mr. O'Keefe's clothing?
Objection. Sustained.
Did you consider this photograph during your analysis before you gave your opinions regarding cuts and tears and lacerations?
No, sir.
Can you take that down, please? When you did your analysis, did you know that a drinking straw was found on the concrete on the street in front of 34 Fairview?
I don't know if it was on the concrete. It might have been on the asphalt, but I do recall a drinking straw, yes.
Did you know that there was a glass found near Mr. O'Keefe? Could you put that up, please, Cindy?
Objection.
Sustained.
Did you... You talked about cuts and injuries. Did you...
Sustained. It sounds like it's beyond the scope.
Very well. When you did test D, did you say the peak acceleration was 780 Gs?
Your Honor, may I refer to my notes?
Yes.
Page 11 of your report.
I think I lost an exhibit.
Is that what you described it as?
For test D?
Yes.
The acceleration of, we talk about the hand?
Yes.
780 Gs, yes.
780 Gs, okay. When you did your comparison before you gave your opinions, you showed us a scuff on the exemplar vehicle, photo 77.
Yes.
Beyond the scope, Mr. Brennan.
A few more questions, Dr. Wolf. You showed us holes in Randy's sweatshirt from test F. You remember that?
Yes.
And you talked about what you would or wouldn't expect in a collision as far as holes. And did you say something like that was inconsistent with Mr. O'Keefe?
Yes.
That's what you said on redirect, right?
Correct.
Okay. Did you consider whether there were holes in Mr. O'Keefe's sweatshirt separate from the holes in the arm?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yes. When you were making that opinion about consistent or inconsistent, did you ever consider whether there were holes in Mr. O'Keefe's sweatshirt other than the right arm?
Well, I know that there was cutting to the...
May I approach and retrieve the exhibit, Your Honor?
Yes.
Excuse me, sir. Did you ever look at the back of the sweatshirt to see if there was any holes to the back of the sweatshirt other than the right arm when you formed your opinion?
I don't recall.
Take a look at the back. Do you see other holes on the back of Mr. O'Keefe's sweatshirt?
It appears I see one hole.
Let me get a little closer so you can get a better look. I'll direct you to here. Do you see more than one hole in the back of the throat and sweatshirt?
Yes.
When you were forming your opinions that the collision would be inconsistent to damage to Mr. O'Keefe's sweatshirt, did you consider that Mr. O'Keefe may have fallen or landed on his back?
Well, in looking at those holes, they're inconsistent with road rash. And again, to get those kind of holes, you have to have prolonged sliding contact on a rough surface.
Did you consider that Mr. O'Keefe may have fallen or landed on his back?
Well, if you just fall and land on your back, you're not going to be sliding to get those abrasions and tearing. And again, those are not consistent with road rash.
Didn't ask that question. Did you consider?
Sorry, can you?
Did you consider whether Mr. O'Keefe had fallen or landed on his back?
No.
Did you know about or consider the multiple holes on the back of his sweatshirt when you came and formulated your opinions?
No.
You did no studies whatsoever about the damage to the sweatshirt if he fell or landed on the cold, hard ground and had broken taillight shards in his clothing, did you?
No.
I have no further questions.
Yeah, just a moment, Your Honor. If I may, Your Honor, you were asked by Mr. Brennan, give me one name, very dramatically, of someone.
Objection.
The objection sustained.
You were asked, give me one name to support using a 50 percentile hybrid 3 in testing forces on a 216-pound man. Do you remember that question?
Yes.
How about the name Judson Welcher? How about that name?
So the objection sustained.
Did Judson Welcher use a 50 percentile hybrid in his drop test?
Objection.
So that sustained as to form.
What did Judson Welcher use in his drop test?
A hybrid 3 50th percentile male, the same that we use in our testing.
You were also asked, whether or not using that hybrid 3 arm with the same speed would have an effect on the force equation, on the force calculation, correct?
Correct.
And you agreed it might have a small effect on the force calculation, correct?
So sustained is to form.
This is just foundational, Your Honor.
Sustained is to form.
How did you answer that question?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sure, let me ask it this way. In the 29 mile an hour test with the hybrid 3 arm, were you going faster than 24 miles an hour?
Yes.
And what was the calculation again on the increased force that would be exerted on the taillight, on the arm, ergo the taillight? 14%?
Yes.
Gotcha.
So sustained.
How much, what was the percentage that you calculated, the increase?
14%.
And did you find damage, even with the increase of 14%, did you find damage on that exemplar taillight consistent with the extensive damage on the subject SUV?
Gotcha.
I'll allow it.
No.
Can we have 201D put up one more time? Mr. Brennan just asked you if you made note of these little red pieces, correct?
Correct.
You have any idea the size of those pieces? As you sit here.
Not without a scale of some sort, no.
So as you sit here, do you have any idea what the size of those pieces are?
I couldn't tell you as I sit here today, no.
No idea if they're a foot long?
Gotcha.
So the objection sustained.
You were asked when shown this picture if you accounted for this in terms of damage to the garment, the sweatshirt, right?
Correct.
What if I told you those were?
Objection.
So the objection's sustained. He said he doesn't know the sizes. That's the end of that.
I realize he said he doesn't know. He was
That's
asked questions.
That's the
question,
end of that, Mr. Jackson.
Do you have the, Mr. Wolk, do you have the picture of the tin? The TIN, tin, the little round tin. Do you see that tin?
Yes.
Are you aware that all those pieces are inside that tin?
Objection.
Sustained. And jurors disregard that.
Did you ever see this tin in your analysis?
I do recall seeing, yes, in the evidence photographs of all the fragments, yes.
In your experience, are very large pieces or very small pieces put in little tins about 2 inches wide?
Sustained.
You were asked a question about the arm being pushed by the taillight. Ask a bunch of questions about that, right?
Correct.
You indicated, what did you say in terms of the contact by a vehicle pushing an arm?
It's going to move with the vehicle until it separates.
Okay. In your testing, how long did it take the Hybrid 3 arm to get up to speed of the vehicle in the 24 mile an hour test? About?
About 10 milliseconds.
Say that again, louder.
10 milliseconds.
10 milliseconds, correct?
Correct.
So when you say the arm is being pushed, it's being hit, correct?
The objection sustained and it's struck.
In every one of your tests, every single one of your tests, did any taillight fragment tear a hole in the sleeve of the shirt that you were testing?
No, there was no holes, punctures, fraying, nothing to the material.
Was there ever a defect in that garment in any of that testing other than the road rash that we saw in the 29 mile an hour direct impact?
That the only test that showed the holes and the abrasions was that full-on hit where the body was sliding on the ground. There was no test where the taillight caused any type of punctures, holes, or fraying to the material.
And in that test, what happened to the back of the Lexus, the test Lexus?
Destroyed.
On redirect, you again talked about the impact between an arm and the broken taillight.
Correct, yes.
And I had asked you on cross-examination or re-cross-examination whether that broken taillight could push the arm, which of course would create force or friction, yes?
Well, once it's moving at a common velocity, I'm just not understanding your question then.
If it's not a common velocity, if the broken taillight is...
Ask the question.
If the broken taillight is pushing the arm, which would mean the broken taillight is going at a faster speed than the arm, if it pushes the arm, the broken taillight can come in contact with the arm, can it?
It's moving with the arm, sir.
Okay, let me ask you this. Would you agree with this? If you have an arm that's actually struck at 25 miles per hour, you're going to have significantly greater damage, especially if there's a taillight that shatters. So if you have the taillight coming in, it's hitting the arm, it's moving forward into the arm. You agree with that?
Objection about the source.
No.
Dr. Rentschler, do you agree with that?
Objection.
So I'm going to allow it. Strike the source.
Do you agree with that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
I can. If you have an arm that's actually struck at 25 miles per hour, you're going to have significantly greater damage, specifically if there's a taillight that shatters, so you have the taillight coming in, it's hitting the arm, and it's moving forward into the arm. Would you agree with that?
Objection.
I'm going to allow it.
In reference to the greater damage, are we talking about damage to the arm?
Do you agree with that phrase?
The best way I can characterize it is it's moving with the arm, sir.
So if that actually caused fracture of the taillight, then parts of the taillight are going to be pushed into the arm and likely embedded into the arm as the vehicle continues forward and pushes the arm out of the way.
Objection.
Do you agree with that?
I'm going to allow it.
No, we need to push. I need to push.
I'm going to read this one more time, okay?
Okay.
Would you agree, if you have an arm that's actually struck at 25 miles per hour, you're going to have significantly greater damage, especially if there's a taillight that shatters. So you have the taillight coming in, it's hitting the arm, and it's moving forward into the arm. So if that actually caused fracture of the taillight, then parts of the taillight are going to be pushed into the arm and likely embedded into the arm as the vehicle continues forward and pushes the arm out of the way. Would you agree with that?
Again, my area of expertise is not injuries to the arm, so whether or not those fragments would be embedded or cause any type of damage to the arm, no. But what I would say is that I would agree with the taillight being pushed into the arm. It's going to cause the taillight to fracture, and then the arm will move with the taillight.
When you do a demonstration, isn't this exactly what you see? Could you play E again for me? Isn't this exactly what you see? Play that, please. And now, stop, please. If Randy is not restrained by a forklift, he is going to move with the car, correct?
Well, if it's just the arm, his arm's going to get accelerated and move, and then his body will be there still.
And that broken taillight, if Randy is not restrained on a forklift, is going to be pushed, like this says, by the arm, by the broken taillight, isn't it?
It's going to move with the arm.
Thank you.
All right, so jurors, we're going to take our morning recess. We'll see you in about 20 minutes.
Please rise for the jury. Right this way.
All right, so we're not going to do the voir dire right now of Dr. Lapisada because everybody needs a break. What we'll do is we'll take the 20-minute recess. Who's doing the director, Dr. Lapisada? Is that you, Mr. Jackson?
Yes.
All right, so what I would ask you to do is not do anything on your direct examination with Dr. Lapisada that involves the mention of dog bites or the evidence regarding motor vehicle experience, because we still need to have the voir dire. But I don't want the jury sitting out there any longer than need be, at least until the luncheon break. So without that, how long will it take you? Can you use the hour?
Thank you for your credentials, but Your Honor, half of the credentials are the fact that she's an expert in dog bites and an expert in motor vehicle. I give her education, training, and background.
Okay, is that all in her resume?
It's all going to be in her direct examination.
No, my question is it in her resume? Has the Commonwealth received notice regarding the dog bite stuff?
The Commonwealth has received the same resume that the court has received. I don't know specifically what her what her resume says about dog bites. I don't think it says really dog bites anywhere. We have absolutely no notice. But the courses that reference dog bites are listed.
Say that again.
The courses that reference her teaching dog bite issue and pattern recognition, they're listed in the resume.
All right. We'll see you at 12. All right, so I'm told counsel wanted to see me.
Your Honor, an issue has arisen related to the cross-examination or recross-examination of the last witness, and Mr. Alessi would like to address the court in detail about that.
All right, so the last witness was your witness. Is there a reason?
This is a separate issue, and I'm asking Mr. Alessi to address the court on this.
Okay. What do you want to tell me, Mr. Alessi?
Bear with me a moment, Your Honor. I need to put on evidence gloves.
Your Honor, the defense moves for a mistrial with prejudice based upon intentional misconduct that just occurred before the court and for the jury. And what I'd like to do, Your Honor, this regards the hoodie, and this regards questioning and representations and questioning by Mr. Brennan. And what I'd like to and need to do, Your Honor, is to have two documents marked as exhibits. And then I am going to use Exhibit 88, which is in evidence, which is the hoodie, which is why I'm putting on the evidence gloves. And it will become quite obvious very shortly what the issues are.
All right, so what are the things that you want to have marked?
What I would like to have marked. What I would like to have marked, the first document. And I want to get the specific title. These two documents are from the criminalist's file, specifically Ms. Maureen Hartnett's notes regarding cuttings from the hoodie sweatshirt that's in the crime lab file folder.
Okay.
So the first is the back of the hoodie. So with Your Honor's permission, I would have that marked for identification.
Exhibit YYY, Friday.
And may I see that, please? Okay.
That is the back of the hoodie, Your Honor. And if I could please have the next marked in order exhibit for identification.
Exhibit ZZZ for identification.
Just give me a minute to read this, Mr. Lessie.
Yes, Your Honor.
So is it that there are no holes in the back? There were no holes on the back of the sweatshirt?
That's only part of it, but that is in fact the case, Your Honor.
Okay. I can't tell entirely from ZZZ, but if that's your argument, YYY for identification appears to support that.
Your Honor, may I have the exhibits marked for identification back for my argument?
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Madam Court Reporter. Your Honor, what we just saw is Attorney Brennan question Dr. Wolf with regard to the hoodie sweatshirt that heretofore has been in the plastic casing for trial. And this is the, what happened was Attorney Brennan held up the casing with the hoodie sweatshirt, went to the back of the hoodie sweatshirt. First point to note, Mr. Brennan did not show Mr. Jackson the back of the hoodie sweatshirt, didn't give Mr. Jackson an opportunity to look at it.
Can I just ask a question? I noticed that it was over here at the witness stand this morning, so I assumed everyone was aware that something was going to happen with it. Is that not the case, Mr. Jackson?
That is not the case, Sean. The okay. First time I realized that line okay. of question was going to be asked was when Mr. Brennan pulled the casing out.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Lessie.
Thank you, Your Honor. So, to do it in order, Mr. Brennan takes the hoodie sweatshirt in the casing, without notice, shows it to Dr. Wolf, and shows the back of the hoodie, which has certain holes, and I'm going to limit calling them holes to do this chronologically. I'm going to refer to exactly what they are in moments.
Okay, so I need to see it. I know you've got gloves on. Where is it right now? It would help me if you held it up for me now.
Absolutely,
Mr. Lessie.
So here is the back
okay.
of the hoodie.
Okay. All right, thank you.
It's very obvious that these are cutting holes cut by the criminalist. And I'm going to get to the, back to this in a moment. But I would like to do it and certainly entertain any of your honor's questions, but in a logical order.
Sure. So I'm not, what about the jurors and lunch? How long do you think this will be?
I think this will take about 10 to 15 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Lessie.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I just want to get the flow back going here in the logic. So, and I'll do it quickly. So Mr. Brennan grabs the hoodie sweatshirt inside the casing, doesn't show it to Attorney Jackson, goes up, we have no idea that this was going to happen, goes up, confronts the witness, Dr. Wolf, shows the back of the hoodie sweatshirt. To my knowledge, the first time the back has been referenced of the hoodie sweatshirt, shows Dr. Wolf, confronts him, and basically says, couldn't these holes be caused, and I'm paraphrasing, from a fall backwards? Obviously positing in the juror's mind after, remember, we just saw all kinds of videos with regard to Rescue Randy and impact at 24, 29 miles an hour, more aptly 29 miles per hour, and damage to the hoodie, etc. So what then happens is Dr. Wolf is asked a series of questions, very much with the indication that somehow, in the clear implication, that these holes are being caused by road rash and that the holes in the back of the hoodie sweatshirt, Exhibit 88, could have been or likely were caused with regard to some type of impact. Clearly presented to the jurors with that in mind and that questioning. Here is the basis for the mistrial with prejudice. Those holes in the back of the hoodie sweatshirt are clearly, unequivocally, without doubt, caused nothing to do with any type of event on or about January 29, 2022.
So do you have something you said, when you said obviously cut by the criminalist, do you have something that shows that? That chart that I couldn't understand quickly, is it on that?
Yes, Your Honor. What we have is two documents to show that.
Right, so the second one, when was that provided.
These, when you say provided, you mean with regard to when did the defense get these in
yes.
a discovery? Let me get the date, Your Honor.
Sure.
Notice of discovery, May 2023.
Okay, thank you.
And I will note, exhibit YYY. The only, I believe, I'm holding up YYY, which is the back of the hoodie, I believe is the only one, to my knowledge, not put into evidence. Not turned into evidence. This is the one that would, it clearly shows the hoodie before the criminalist started her work with the cuts. There are no cuts to YYY, and if we need to, we'll bring Ms. Hartnett in to confirm.
All right, so is ZZZ in evidence?
ZZZ is not in evidence, and that is part of the basis for the mistrial. It is no coincidence that these two documents are not in evidence, because if they were in evidence, they would clearly have prevented the stunt that we just saw occur with regard to Dr. Wolf. So that is part of the intentional misconduct, Your Honor, is these are documents from the criminalist's file. It's the Commonwealth's documents. And it is very clear when you go to exhibit ZZZ, the cuts that the criminalist made to the back of the hoodie are specified.
So where on that? Because when I quickly looked at it, I didn't see it. Where? What does it say? Go ahead and read it to me, please.
It's item number 7. I'll read it from the top, LIMS 22-2184, analyst MSH, which is the initials for Ms. Hartnett. Dates, May 11, 2022, May 12, 2023, and then May 18, 2023. And what she does is she's got the...
You know what? Can you bring it up to me, please?
I certainly can, Your Honor. And I can conduct my argument from right here if that helps,
yeah,
Your Honor.
I just want to see, point out to me where it says, where it shows the back.
This is the back. So you can see the back of the hoodie. That's the back of the hoodie head. And then you can see the various... Let me just get a check on this, Your Honor. I'm not...
Right. Mr. Brennan, you should come up and look at this as well.
Thank you.
And I'm...
So Mr. Lessie's statement?
Yes.
All right, so this is why...
Can I get the
labeled cuttings?
Pardon me?
The labeled cuttings.
Right, but if I can, Your Honor,
sure.
I want to clarify this. Yes, are you willing just to let me just make sure I get it.
Mr. Jackson, it says exterior front, what Mr. Lessie was pointing me to.
Well, this is it may print the wrong page. I can do it, but Mr. Wolf, can you print the back? And then,
Your Honor, are you comfortable using the computer or the back? Because I think we just had the wrong one.
We need to mark it, though.
Understood.
He's printing it right now.
We wanted to have the front and the back to show all the cuttings, but what only printed out was the front. We are now printing the back. Your Honor is correct. Thank you.
If I may, Your Honor, I'm advised it'll take 2 minutes because it has to go.
All right, so go ahead with your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, Your Honor, what is being printed is the, which we will mark, will be the front of the hoodie. The purpose of Exhibit ZZZ and the one that is being printed is to show and to give the court, and we're going to request to give to the jury the complete picture and the complete true story about these holes in the hoodie that were presented as if they were caused in some manner by something else other than the
criminal. So that seems perfectly reasonable, and I'd be inclined to do that.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. And here is the reason for the motion for a mistrial with prejudice. On its own to do this, and you put together all of the parts of what just occurred, you start with the fact that the
and if I could, Your Honor, now that I have it yet marked so I can then refer to it.
All right.
Thank you.
Can he print extra copies too so I can have my own copy?
Absolutely.
Can you? And for the Commonwealth to see.
And I'm going to show the Commonwealth what I just printed.
Exhibit A.
Thank you, Madam Court Reporter.
And here's another document, chain of custody document.
Well, Mr. Brennan's viewing that, we may head to Madam Court Reporter. The chain of custody document for these, and ask that be marked as the next exhibit in order.
Okay.
And then, with Your Honor's permission, I would have Madam Court Reporter hand them both up to Your Honor, so
sure.
Your Honor can see what I'm referencing.
Thank you.
Exhibit BBBB for ID.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Court Reporter.
Do you need this, Mr. Lessie?
I do not need either of them, Your Honor, and I have the extra copies as well.
Okay, so, Your Honor, I now have enough copies for Your Honor and for the Commonwealth.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So if I could have one set, that would be great. Yeah. Thank you.
I still do not have ZZZ.
Nor do I.
All right. Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Lessie.
So, Your Honor, to do this quickly chronologically, so we have a hoodie sweatshirt that was brought into the criminalist, Ms. Hartnett, with the back of the hoodie with no holes on it. The criminalist makes cuts to the back of the hoodie, makes cuts to the front of the hoodie. The exhibit, Your Honor, depicts those. There's a chain of custody document that describes the chain of custody for the hoodie and the cuts in the chronology. And of course, we have Exhibit 88, which is the hoodie. So what Mr. Brennan did
And I'm now pulling exhibit 88. He holds up the back of the hoodie, which has cuts in the back from the criminalist, somebody from the Commonwealth, a witness in this case, Ms. Hartman, she's testified, and Mr. Brennan has indicated he wants her to come back and testify, which we welcome. And now what we have is we have holes in the back of the sweatshirt that were dramatically held up to the, and confronted with Dr. Wolf, and then the jury sees it. With the clear, unmistakable, purposeful intention of having the jury conclude that these holes could have come from events on January 29th of 2022, when in fact the Commonwealth well knows from its own documents, from its own criminal list, that those holes in the back were caused by their criminal list as part of their examination and sampling of the hoodie. What could be more egregious? What could be more misleading than that? And what could be more important for a context than the alleged collision that never occurred? That's the topic before some of the most significant and probative witnesses in this trial that the Commonwealth has been attacking from the jump of pretrial. They picked the most opportune, sensitive time to pull this stuff. This is intentional. This is irremediable. This is on the key issue of this case, whether there was any collision at all. On its own, Your Honor, on its own, this is a mistrial with prejudice. But I add to that what just happened, and I'm not going to repeat or go into other than to reference. This comes on just mere days after the Commonwealth raised the specter of absence of DNA on the same hoodie sweatshirt without having the criminalist, Ms. Kuhn from UC Davis come in. I know Your Honor already ruled on that.
Right, and so let's move along from
right,
that.
That's right, and I'm going to come back to this. Why is this occurring, Your Honor? Why is this happening? The Commonwealth has no case. They have no collision. They are desperate and are trying to create evidence of specters of collision where the evidence doesn't support it. So what have we come to? We've come to the manufacture of evidence. We've come to, incredibly, taking a hoodie, a key piece of evidence in this case, and holding up to Dr. Wolf, the ARCA expert, to try to make it seem like Dr. Wolf didn't do his job. You didn't account for these holes. How could you be a credible accident reconstructionist when you talk about some holes, but you don't talk about these holes? Knowing all along the holes that Attorney Brennan is trying to impeach Dr. Wolf on were caused by the Commonwealth's own criminalists as part of sampling. I don't believe one could come up with more misleading, misdirecting, elucidation of testimony than this on the key issue in the case. We have irrefutable objective evidence, and I will state that it's more than interesting that none of these exhibits that Your Honor now has marked for identification
were put in evidence by the Commonwealth. Isn't it some coincidence that these are the one, and the only one of the, you know, with regard to the hoodie, the back of it's not in, although the rest of them are, but these aren't. Your Honor, I think there is one and only one conclusion in that this is intentional, that it is a matter of such significance and of such misconduct and intentional that it merits the sanction of a mistrial with prejudice. The amount of effort, the amount of work, I can't even begin to think to remedy this in front of the jury, to go backwards on this. That should not befall the defense. That should befall the prosecution. Ms. Reed, again, is entitled, like every other defendant in this wonderful Commonwealth, to a fair trial. The prosecution is supposed to be held to a higher standard, to do justice, to create a fair trial. This is the antithesis of a fair trial. Ms. Reed's rights under the Constitution and the Declaration of Rights have once again been trampled on, and it is becoming evidently clear the more desperate the prosecution gets because it can't prove its theory, including its own medical examiner can't support them, that they're now resorting to conduct like this. Your Honor, at some point, this has to come to an end. At some point, Ms. Reed's rights have to be protected. At some point, confidence in the judicial system, the public's confidence in the judicial system, that prosecutors will conduct themselves with their duty to present a fair trial, that has to be enforced at some point for Ms. Reed to receive the fair trial that she and every other defendant in this Commonwealth is entitled to.
All right, thank you. Mr. Brennan.
Your Honor, my brief review of the lab paperwork and looking at the hoodie, it appears that I made a mistake. And so I think what should happen is there should be a curative instruction. There should be a stipulation. The court should instruct the jury that during Mr. Brennan's cross-examination, he asked Dr. Wolf about holes on the sweatshirt or holes on the back of Mr. O'Keefe's sweatshirt. The parties agree the holes were made by a crime lab technician. This was done inadvertently but should not have been asked. The court should strike the questions and the answers. And you should instruct the jury there to completely disregard any questions or answers about the holes in the back of the sweatshirt. And the court should allow the defense to introduce the lab paperwork.
All right. So I'm not going to allow the mistrial motion, Mr. Lessie. What I'm going to do is instruct the jurors. I'm going to put in what's been marked for identification, Y, Z, A, and B, four of each letters. I'm going to put all these into evidence. They can be displayed for the jury, and I'm going to instruct the jury that during the cross-examination of Dr. Wolf, Mr. Brennan asked him about holes in the back of the sweatshirt and whether or not they perhaps could have come from events or implying or something like this. I instruct you are not permitted to draw any inference that these could have come from the events of January 29th, 2022. I instruct you further that those holes were made by the criminalist, Ms. Harnett, during the course of her inspection and sampling of the sweatshirt on, I just put the dates aside. Chrissy, can I see those, please? It's unclear for me. Do you have a better idea, Mr. Lessie, what day these were done? Is it all of those 3 days? Now I see a fourth day. 5/11/2022, 5/12/2023, and 6/18/2023. Those are the 3 dates.
Your Honor, on or about May 18th, when the defense filed a motion to test. So that's the probative date.
So May 18th?
Yes, that's good.
Okay.
And that's 2023.
Yep. All right. That's what I'm going to do. Is there anything further you want me to include in the instruction? Your rights are saved regarding the mistrial. I disagree with you on that.
Your Honor, I'm not going to go any more into the argument, but I appreciate the opportunity to provide perhaps some further instructions for Your Honor.
Right. So I'll hear you. Go ahead.
So the first, Your Honor, is with regard to two things. One, I would like the opportunity to have the hoodie sweatshirt held up. Because that's what
okay.
happened.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Thank you. So that's number one as part of the stipulation. And then
I'm not wording it as a stipulation, and I'm not saying it was inadvertent. I am giving an instruction that they cannot consider it for this purpose, and I am allowing these to be placed into evidence. So it's not a stipulation. It's from me, which I think is more forceful. Wow.
I misspoke, Your Honor. I agree, not a stipulation, but just as Your Honor said, with regard to the matter Your Honor said they're not to take an inference, I would respectfully request that this be handled just like Your Honor did with regard to the rock at 34 Fairview. Your Honor said that rock wasn't present. On or about the time of
entry. So I do say that when I say Ms. Harnett did this. So rewording it just a little bit.
Yes, exactly.
Mr. Brennan asked Dr. Wolf about holes in the back of the sweatshirt. I instruct you that you are not permitted to draw any inference that those holes were a result of the events on January 29th, 2020. So, this is what I'm going to say. So if you're not going to listen to it, that's fine. I've already said it. All right, we can bring the jury in. It's what I said, Mr. Alessi.
Your Honor, I was consulting with Mr. Alessi. I'm not showing disrespect to the court.
Okay.
Of course you were listening.
All right. So it's what I said, Mr. Alessi. I instruct you that you're not permitted to draw an inference that the holes came from the events of January 29, 2025. Those holes were made by the criminalist, Ms. Harnett, during the course of her inspection and sampling of the sweatshirt on May 18, 2023.
Is it possible, Your Honor, last comment, to instead of not drawing inference, but you should conclude that these holes were not present in the hoodie sweatshirt. They were caused by the criminalist
So I can just leave that all out then and just say Mr. Brennan asked Dr. Wolf about the holes in the sweatshirt. I instruct you that those holes were made by the criminalist, Ms. Harnett, during the course of her inspection and sampling of the sweatshirt on May 18th. It's probably neater that way anyway. All right, let's bring them in, please.
Judge, just as a housekeeping matter, the sweatshirt's been taken out of the plastic sheathing. It might need to be remarked. The plastic sheathing was marked, but if we're going to put it into a bag or something like that, it might need to have it marked. But we don't need to do that right this second.
Okay.
May I approach Mr. McDermott with exhibit?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. I'm sorry.
Your
Mr. Lesser, you're simply going to stand and hold the sweatshirt, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Counsel, this is Exhibit 223.
And, Your Honor, I would hold it as Your Honor begins to read. Is that consistent with Your Honor's expectation?
No, I want you to hold it up with the back.
Would you like me to start reading?
You do that first, and then I'll give the instruction.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, so Mr. Lessie, why don't you just, where are you going to stand?
Pardon me?
Where are you going to stand?
I would suggest, Your Honor, right about here.
All right. So you can stand there, you can hold it up, then I'm going to ask you to put it down, and then I'll give the instruction.
And then I will return it to Mr. McDermott, or the court officer. Return
to yes.
Thank you.
Court officer.
Bear with me a moment, Your Honor. I'm going to put on the mic.
All right. Then we will take the luncheon recess. When we come back, we'll have the voir dire. Or actually, is Dr. Lapisada here?
She's here, but she's not next. I'm going to call up.
John Tier.
For just the measurements?
No measurements.
Okay. Your Honor, if I could be able to show the exhibits from Ms. Hartnett for the cuts, along with the next step of the structure.
Well, I say it, and I'm going to tell her what they are, so.
Please be seated. Court is in session.
All right. Jurors, I appreciate your patience. Mr. Lessie, why don't you hold the exhibit up for the jurors, please? All right, jurors, that's the back of the sweatshirt that was shown to Dr. Wolf. Okay, thank you. Why don't you go ahead and put it back in the bag? So, jurors, I instruct you that those holes were made by the criminalist, Ms. Harnett, during the course of her inspection and sampling of the sweatshirt back on May 18th, 2023. Okay, so. I know your lunches are here, but I think we'll, Mr. Iannetti, your next witness, please.
John Tiernan.
Raise your right hand.
You saw me swear the evidence you give to the court and jury in the case now here, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do. Thank
you. All right, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead, Mr. Iannetti, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good afternoon, sir. In a good loud voice, would you please state your name and spell your last name?
Sure, my name is John Tedeman. It's T-E-D-E-M-A-N.
Do you work, sir?
I do.
What do you do for work?
I am a private investigator.
Do you work for someone else or do you have your own firm?
I have my own firm.
What is the name?
Forum Investigations.
And that's F-O-R-U-M?
Correct.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about your education and work history. You're from this area?
Yes, Boston proper.
I'm sorry?
Yes, from Boston.
Where did you attend high school?
The Roxbury Latin School.
When did you graduate?
1996.
Where did you go to college?
I went to Princeton University.
What year did you graduate?
2000.
What did you do after graduation from Princeton University?
I became a federal agent.
Where?
The agency or the location?
Oh, I meant the location, sorry.
I started out in Los Angeles and then I was back in Boston.
And what years were you a federal agent in Boston and Los Angeles?
2002 through 2008.
And what agency did you work for?
I worked for the Inspector General for the Social Security Administration, Office of Investigations.
And what type of work did you do in terms of investigations?
We did fraud investigations, identity theft, credit card fraud, fugitive operations, all sorts of things, anything involving a Social Security number, basically.
And why did you leave in 2008?
I went to law school.
Where?
Suffolk.
What year did you graduate from Suffolk Law School?
2013.
And what did you do after graduation from Suffolk Law School?
I've had a small solo law practice and worked as a real estate broker.
And what type of law did you practice?
Mostly real estate law.
When did you start forum investigations?
In April of 2024.
Are you still practicing as a lawyer?
Not very much, no. I still have my license, but my bar card, but I don't practice much.
All right. How did you become involved in this case?
I was contacted by somebody from your office last Tuesday, I believe, the 3rd.
Okay. And was it explained to you why you were brought in at this late juncture?
Yes, it was explained that there was another investigator who had a health issue and would not be able to testify. So would I be able to help out with a small assignment?
All right. What were you asked to do?
I was asked to travel to 34 Fairview Road in Canton and take some measurements and photographs.
Did you agree to do that?
Yes.
When did you go?
On June 3rd, I believe I arrived about 5:30 at 34 Fairview.
Okay, and when you say June 3rd, we are talking about last week,
yes,
correct?
Last week, yes.
Whom did you see when you got there?
One of the homeowners, an older gentleman, greeted me when I pulled in the driveway.
All right, and it was not the Albert family, correct?
It was not.
Did that individual give you permission to enter onto the property?
He did.
What did you bring with you?
I brought an iPhone as a camera, and I brought a wheeled measuring device.
Can you describe what a wheeled measuring device is?
Yeah, it's like a handle with two wheels at the bottom, and in the middle there's like a little odometer that measures feet and inches.
And if we could, Mr. Wolk, could we display the photo of the front of 34 Fairview that's already in evidence with the court's permission?
Yes.
And what exhibit number is that, Mr. Wolk? 46. Do you see exhibit 46 on the screen, sir?
I do.
Do you recognize that?
I do.
What do you recognize that to be?
That is 34 Fairview Road in Canton.
When you got to 34 Fairview Road in Canton on June 3rd, did you make note of the various entrances to the residence on the front from the front of the house?
I did.
Could you describe those for the jury?
Yes, on the left side center of the building, there's what I would call the front door, up those four steps, I guess. Then if you were to look farther to the right, there at the end of the main building, there's another door, which I guess is the second front door or side door.
And with regard to that door, is it fair to say that faces outward, faces toward the road?
It does, it faces directly towards the road.
Okay, continue please.
And then past that to the right, there are the windows, and then if you can see the little red line, that is a side door that goes into the garage. Yes, right there.
It's been highlighted there?
Yes.
Okay. And then there are the two garage doors.
And the two garage car doors, yes.
Four cars to enter. Okay.
Yes.
We can take that down, Mr. Wolk, and put the lights on. May I approach the witness, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you.
So I've placed a photograph in front of you. Do you can you identify that for the jury?
Yes, that appears to be a photograph that I took of the side front door, the secondary front door, the garage door, and the two car doors to the garage.
Okay, particularly with regard to the side pedestrian entrance into the garage, the red door that you identified in the previous exhibit, does that photograph fairly and accurately represent the layout of the house in terms of the outside and the entrances that you've previously testified to?
Yes, it does.
I would offer that, Your Honor.
I can be heard.
All right, can I see those, please, sir?
Okay, Mr. Wolk, whenever you're ready, if you can display that portion. You see what has been.
So I'm going to ask you to take that down. Folks, we're going to take the luncheon break at this point, okay?
Hey, please rise for the jury. Right this way, please.
So you can just follow the jury's lead. Excellent. Thank you.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spend on Moto, America's Social Casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
It's called soccer.
It's called football.
Soccer.
Football.
Domino's best deal ever lets you get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99.
Okay, we can agree on that.
Yeah, fully.
So, pineapple? Don't ruin it. Get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99. Finally, something everyone can get behind.
And if the rest disagree, that's between them and Domino's. Which means the only thing left to fight over is who's ordering.
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6:15 to 7:26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings. 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.